Dear Prince, you must order someone else to do it. Angada replied, It does not matter who is in charge. If someone does not go to Lanka, be it myself or someone else, then our only alternative is to fast until death. Therefore, Jambavan, please devise some means whereby we can cross the ocean and save ourselves from Sugriva's wrath. Jambavan then said, Do not worry, for I shall now appeal to someone who will certainly be able to perform this difficult feat. O Hanuman, you are equal to Garuda, the carrier of Lord Vishnu. Why have you not spoken up? Please listen as I now describe the glories of the best of all monkeys. Once, one of the foremost apsaras, namely Punjikashtali, was cursed by a rishi and thus took birth as Anjana, the daughter of the monkey king Kunjara. Anjana grew up to be unparalleled in beauty and could change her form at will. Once, after having married the monkey chief Kesari, Anjana took the form of a human being and began wandering through the mountains. Upon seeing the beautiful Anjana, Vayu became captivated and removed her dress by means of the wind. When Vayu saw Anjana's rounded and closely united thighs, her swelling breasts and other feminine attractions, he became overwhelmed with sexual desire and embraced her by force. Unable to see her assailant, Anjana cried out, Who is violating my vow to accept only one husband? Vayu replied, I am the god of air, Vayu. I have not physically spoiled your chastity, because I have entered you mentally. By my grace, you will give birth to a powerful son who is equal to myself in ranging at will. Anjana became pleased by Vayu's words, and soon thereafter she gave birth to Hanuman within a mountain cave. The next morning, when baby Hanuman saw the rising sun, he thought it to be a shiny fruit. Desiring to catch it, he leapt more than 3,000 yojanas into the sky, but was thrown back to the earth by the sun's brilliance. Unscathed, Hanuman jumped again. This time, however, Indra became angered by the monkey's audacity and hurled his thunderbolt. Thus the king of heaven's weapon dashed Hanuman against a mountainside, fracturing the left side of his chin. Indeed, it is because of this incident that Hanuman received his name, for Hanuman means one having a broken chin. Vayu became furious at Indra's aggression against his son and began withholding the heir from the three worlds. This plunged the demigods into great anxiety. With Lord Brahma at their head, they rushed to Vayu's abode, hoping to pacify him. Just to satisfy the wind god, Lord Brahma blessed Hanuman to become invincible in battle. Indra was pleased and surprised to see that the baby monkey had not been killed by his thunderbolt. Therefore, he awarded Hanuman the benediction of being able to die at will. Jambavan concluded, I consider Hanuman alone to be capable of executing our mission. Of course, in the past, this little jump would have been nothing for me. As Lord Trivikram expanded his three steps to take away Bali's kingdom, I soared around the world 21 times to circumambulate him. When the demigods and demons wanted to produce nectar, it was I who single-handedly collected all the herbs that were thrown into the ocean of milk. However, I have grown very old. It is now time for Hanuman to exhibit his prowess. Hanuman became greatly encouraged upon hearing these words of glorification. Then, to the joy of all the monkeys present, Hanuman began expanding himself into a gigantic form while telling his own glories. I am able to go around Mount Meru 1,000 times without even pausing, and by splashing the waters of the ocean, I could inundate the entire world. I could circumambulate Garuda 1,000 times as he flies through the sky, and I can uproot the entire city of Lanka and carry it a great distance if I so desire. All the monkeys were thrilled to hear Hanuman boast of his prowess. However, to remind him of the gravity of the situation, they said, We shall all stand here upon one foot until you return. Our very lives rest upon you, as well as the hopes for recovering Sita, all hopes for recovering Sita. Hanuman then informed the monkeys, I will leap from the peak of Mount Mahendra, since it is capable of sustaining the immense pressure I will exert on the earth for my leap. Then Hanuman departed, and within a minute he arrived at the mighty Mahendra Hill, which would serve as the support for his monumental leap. Now we'll start the Sundara Kanda. The virtuous Hanuman first offered his obeisances unto Surya, Indra, Vayu, and Brahma at the foot of Mount Mahendra. Then, after climbing to its peak, he expanded his body to gigantic proportions. By grabbing the mountain with his hands and feet, he inadvertently crushed many deer underfoot. Hanuman paused for several moments and composed his mind in preparation for the great leap. Because of the weight of his huge body, the entire mountain began to shake. Large snakes vomited fire from their mouths and bit into the rocks, causing them to split into thousands of flaming fragments. Excuse me. The Vidyadharas flew up into the sky to witness Hanuman's spectacular jump. Hanuman crouched down, summoning all his energy, and as the mountain peak began to crumble, spurts of water gushed forth from the immense pressure. Gandharva couples that had been sporting in the heavenly region along with numerous rishis that resided there quickly fled the mountain out of fear. Hanuman then declared to the monkeys, "Either I shall bring back Sita, or I shall uproot the entire city of Lanka along with Ravana." Hanuman drew in his breath and tensed his muscles. Suddenly he sprang into the air like an arrow shot from the bow of Lord Rama. Due to the force of Hanuman's jump, all the trees on the peak of Mount Mahendra were uprooted and thrown into the sky. Hanuman soared like a huge cloud and stretched out his tail. As Hanuman sailed through the heavens, the uprooted trees followed in his wake and plummeted into the ocean. Colored flowers from their branches fluttered down and scattered over the surface of the water, creating a beautiful sight. The hurricane created by Hanuman's flight agitated the ocean, creating waves as tall as mountains that crashed against his breast. The shadow of Hanuman projected upon the surface of the water measured 80 by 240 miles, and the suction created as he passed through the air drew the surrounding clouds to him. Hanuman resembled the moon as he became hidden in the masses of clouds and visible again as he emerged from them. Out of parental affection, Vayu blew cooling breezes, keeping the sunshine from scorching him. As Hanuman soared through the sky, all classes of beings applauded him. The ocean deity also desired to assist him out of respect for Lord Rama. He felt obliged to help, since Lord Rama had descended in the Ikshvaku dynasty, and Rama's forefather, King Sagara, had extended the ocean's boundaries. Previously, Indra had placed the great Mainaka mountain in the middle of the ocean to obstruct the demons from traveling to the earth from the nether regions. The ocean now ordered Mainaka to rise up out of the water, hoping to assist Hanuman by providing him with a resting place. However, when Hanuman saw the great mountain peak emerging from the sea, he considered it to be an impediment and knocked it down with his chest. Appreciating Hanuman's prowess, Mainaka took a human form and stood on his own summit. He said, "O son of Vayu, you may rest a while on my peak and then continue your journey. Please accept this humble service, for I desire to worship your father by offering you this assistance." In the Satya Yuga, all mountains had wings, and we flew through the sky like so many Garudas. However, the demigods and the rishis became fearful at the possibility of our falling to the ground and smashing everything. Finally, in a fit of anger, Indra took up his thunderbolt and proceeded to cut off the wings of many thousands of mountains. Indra likewise attacked me, but Vayu came to my rescue and by forcibly casting me into the ocean. Thus my wings were spared. Now, to repay that favor to your father, I request you stop a while and accept my hospitality." Hanuman replied, "Please excuse me, for I cannot dare stop. I promised the other monkeys that I would not tarry on my journey. My time is short." Hanuman touched the top of Mainaka mountain as a token of respect and then soared upwards, continuing his flight. Being pleased, Indra came forward and told Mainaka, "There is no more need for you to be afraid of my thunderbolt. You may keep your wings and travel as you wish." Meanwhile, the celestial rishis, demigods, and Gandharvas approached Surasa, the mother of the Nagas, requesting, "We would like to ascertain the real strength of Hanuman. Thus we wish you to assume the form of a huge Rakshasi and try to impede him. Either Hanuman will quickly defeat you or he will give way to despondency." Taking the form of a huge disfigured Rakshasi, as large as a mountain, Surasa suddenly emerged from the ocean, blocking Hanuman's path. She announced, "By the benediction of Lord Brahma, it has been ordained that I can eat whatever food comes before me. O best of the monkeys, by the will of Providence, you have crossed my path. Now I invite you to enter my gaping mouth." Hanuman replied, "I am trying to serve Lord Rama by locating his kidnapped wife Sita, and you should assist me. However, if you are determined to devour me instead, then after finding Sita and reporting back to Rama, I shall return here and enter your mouth without fail." Surasa retorted, "O impudent one, because of Lord Brahma's benediction, you will be forced to enter my mouth now." Then Surasa opened her mouth, 10 yojanas wide, to block Hanuman's path. Then Hanuman expanded his body to 10 yojanas and challenged, "You will have to enlarge your mouth more if you want me to enter you." Surasa then expanded her mouth to 20 yojanas, and the infuriated Hanuman expanded to 30 yojanas. Surasa countered by making her mouth 40 yojanas, and in response, Hanuman expanded himself to 50 yojanas. Surasa then expanded her mouth to 60 yojanas, and Hanuman enlarged himself to 70. She then expanded herself to 80 yojanas, and Hanuman grew to 90. Countering this, Surasa expanded her mouth to a gaping 100 yojanas wide. Then, in the twinkling of an eye, Hanuman shrank to the size of a thumb and quickly darted in and out of her mouth, saying, "O daughter of Daksha, the condition of your benediction has now been fulfilled, and I shall continue on my journey." Surasa was delighted with Hanuman's clever victory. She then appeared before him in her original form, saying, "Well done, O foremost of monkeys! Go now and accomplish your mission. May you soon unite Sita and Lord Rama." Hanuman continued on his way, soaring through the sky. Suddenly, a Rakshasi woman named Simhika grabbed onto his shadow. Unaware of what had happened, Hanuman first thought he was losing his strength. However, upon looking around, he saw a huge, ghastly creature emerging from the sea. As Simhika rushed toward Hanuman, her mouth opened wide, Hanuman began to expand his body. However, the sharp-witted Hanuman realized that the onrushing Rakshasi's mouth was still large enough to swallow him. Thus, reversing his previous strategy, Hanuman suddenly shrank himself to tiny proportions. He then entered the Rakshasi's mouth and plunged into her hideous body. Using his sharp claws, Hanuman proceeded to tear the Rakshasi's heart to pieces. Then he came out of her body and resumed his expanded size. As Simhika fell down dead into the water, the Siddhas, Charanas, and Vidyadharas glorified Hanuman for his victory. Soon thereafter, the beaches and forests on the distant shore of Lanka came into view. Thinking the Rakshasas would spot him, Hanuman resumed his normal size and landed on a crag of Trikuta, the main mountain on the island of Lanka. Even after his jump of 100 yojanas, Hanuman did not feel even slightly tired. Gazing upward, he beheld the wonderful city of Lanka perched atop the Trikuta mountain, surrounded by moats filled with lotus flowers. The city was encircled by a high golden wall that was heavily guarded by fierce Rakshasas. As Hanuman approached the northern gate of Lanka, he saw towering white palaces and broad avenues adorned with golden arches, all crowded with innumerable fierce, ugly Rakshasas, armed with all manner of weapons and able to change their forms at will. Other demons have golden arches. Hanuman thought to himself, "This city appears to be unconquerable, even by the demigods. What to speak of an army of monkeys? How can Rama hope to vanquish the Rakshasas, since only myself, Sugriva, Nila, and Angada can cross the ocean to come here? Regardless, my first duty is to find out if Sita is alive. I must carefully consider how I can meet her, for incompetent messengers sometimes spoil even the best plans. The guards appear to be extremely vigilant. Therefore, I cannot try to enter in my natural form. It appears that not even the wind could enter Lanka undetected. I must assume some inconspicuous guise and enter the city at night." Hanuman eagerly waited for the sun to set, and when it finally grew dark, he became as small as a cat and entered Lanka by jumping over the high wall. Hanuman saw that the city was beyond his imagination, full of 7- and 8-story palaces that were lavishly adorned with gold and jewels. The entire city was filled with magnificent houses with windows of diamond-studded lattice. Inside were beautiful women, and the sounds of laughter and sweet music could be heard. Throughout the city, Rakshasa Brahmanas chanted Vedic hymns, praying for Ravana's protection. The moon then rose above the horizon, thus helping Hanuman by spreading its silvery illumination. At that time, Lanka, personified in the form of a hideous Rakshasi woman, came before Hanuman, challenging, "How have you entered this city unchecked? What is a monkey like you doing in the kingdom of the Rakshasas?" Hanuman responded, "I will only answer your question after you tell me who you are." The Rakshasi then angrily replied, "I am the presiding deity of Lanka. I carefully guard this city on behalf of Ravana. Because you have entered here without permission, you shall meet your death today by my hands." Hanuman said, "I have come here to take a tour of the city, for I desire to see all the magnificent gardens and palaces." Lanka defiantly replied, "This city is inhabited only by Rakshasas. No stray monkeys are allowed to roam the streets. If you want to view the opulence of Lanka, you will have to kill me first." To this, Hanuman declared, "I will look at the city as much as I like and depart the same way I entered." The enraged Lanka shouted, "You will not!" and struck Hanuman with the palm of her left hand. Hanuman roared loudly with indignation and struck Lanka with his left fist, although not violently because she was a woman. Lanka fell to the ground, moaning in pain, begging, "Please spare me, for a true hero will never strike a woman. Once, long ago, Lord Brahma told me, when you are overpowered by a monkey, the destruction of your city and all the Rakshasas is imminent. I therefore admit defeat, for I can understand that Ravana's death is at hand. O monkey, you have my permission to enter Lanka." Hanuman quickly traversed the entire city, jumping from one rooftop to the next. He detected many spies in various disguises. He also saw an army of 100,000 Rakshasas protecting Ravana's palace, which was completely encircled by thick walls made of gold. As Hanuman searched for Sita throughout Lanka, he beheld great palaces with jewel-inlaid doors. The walls within were dust-free and as clear as crystal. The floors were laid out in fascinating designs. Filigree stairways inlaid with gold and silver led to balconies, and above them were magnificent domes and ceilings. Musical instruments played as the wives of the Rakshasas came and reclined in the arms of their amorous husbands. As he entered one residence after another, Hanuman saw lovers caressing each other, while other women applied sandalwood paste to their bodies. Here someone slept, there someone laughed, while others engaged in the affairs of lovemaking. Someone was sprawled out naked, having been left aside by her husband, and someone else, decorated with flowers and ornaments, was just welcoming her lover. In this way, Hanuman observed thousands of beautiful women with moon-like faces, their lotus petal eyes casting sidelong glances that beguiled the hearts of their loved ones. However, as there was no trace of Sita, Hanuman became somewhat disheartened. I'm thinking of this description of Lanka. It reminds me of the poem by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the Xanadu. In Xanadu, did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree? And he says, "So twice 5 miles of fertile ground with walls and towers were girdled round, and there were gardens bright with sinuous rills where blossomed many an incense-bearing tree, and here were forests ancient as the hills, enfolding sunny spots of greenery." Hanuman decided to search throughout the palaces belonging to Ravana's relatives and consorts. From a distance, these residences appeared to be like enormous clusters of monsoon clouds, illuminated by streaks of lightning. After searching through many wonderfully opulent homes, Hanuman entered the palace of Ravana, which was filled with beautiful women and the sound of tinkling ornaments. Indeed, Hanuman felt as though he were being carried across the sky in a celestial chariot pulled by white swans. The interior of Ravana's palace was a ravishing paradise, and with wish-fulfilling trees surrounded by jewel-like flowers. While roaming about, Hanuman saw many pleasure rooms, their floors wet from wine and liquor. There were rooms filled with all varieties of weapons and rooms filled with treasure. However, to Hanuman's disappointment, Sita was nowhere to be seen, but he had not yet searched Ravana's personal quarters, which alone were 4 miles wide and 8 miles long. As Hanuman wandered throughout Ravana's vast domain, he considered how to enter the apartments. Finally, he came to the room where the Pushpaka chariot was being kept. This chariot was originally built by Vishvakarma for Lord Brahma and could traverse the sky simply by following the mental indication of the driver. The Pushpaka chariot hovered above the floor and was adorned with birds made from jewels that flapped their wings mechanically, and with snakes made of silver and gold. Inside were artificial elephants with shapely trunks that showered scented water upon a carved statue of the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi, who stood elegantly within a pool of water, a lotus flower in each of her four lovely hands. The Pushpaka chariot appeared like a large floating hill and was fitted with stairways of gold, white crystal floors, and balconies made from sapphires. To get a good look at Ravana's inner apartments, Hanuman jumped up onto the Pushpaka chariot. From that vantage point, he could see a great hall with a crystal floor that was inlaid with pearls, diamonds, and gold, and covered by a great carpet having the geography of the earth with all its mountains and seas as its design. Stairways made of gems led to the upper levels, and everything was softly illuminated by golden lamps whose light reflected upon countless valuable jewels. Everything about this spectacular hall was gratifying to the five senses. Thus, Hanuman began to wonder, "Where am I? Is this heaven? This could well be the supreme realm of Lord Brahma." Upon entering the inner quarters, Hanuman saw thousands of beautiful, colorfully dressed women sprawling upon the expansive carpet. With half of the night gone, they were fast asleep under the influence of intoxicating wines and the exhaustion from their amorous revels. The women's jeweled bracelets, belts, and ankle bells were now silent, although sparkling, and thus appeared like lotus lakes, serene with silent swans and sleeping bees. Hanuman gazed upon the ladies, who lay with eyes closed and lips tightly shut, like fragrant lotuses that close their petals upon the arrival of evening. In their stupor, the ladies' hair had become disheveled and their jewels scattered. While dancing and drinking, their ankle bracelets had been misplaced, their marks of tilak erased, and their necklaces broken. Their belts were loosened, their dresses wrinkled, and their garlands torn and trampled. They appeared like flowering creepers that had been crushed by elephants. Some of the ladies slept, using their bracelet-adorned arms as pillows, while others reposed on the breasts of their co-wives. Still others rested their heads upon another's lap, stomach, or buttocks. Still others, captured in love's intoxication, relaxed with arms interclasped, embracing each other as they slept. Seeing this scene, Hanuman wondered, "Whose limbs are those? Whose garlands? Whose clothes? Whose ornaments?" Indeed, the consorts of Ravana were so intimately united in sleep that it was difficult to know who was who, but not whom they served. Under the influence of lust, innumerable daughters of kings, brahmanas, daityas, and gandharvas had become the wives of Ravana. Ravana had kidnapped some of them after defeating their relatives, but all had accepted him willingly under the infatuation of desire. None were low-born, ugly, crude, or stupid, and none were neglected by Ravana, Lord of Lanka. In their midst, Hanuman saw Ravana lying asleep upon the elegant silken couch placed atop a crystal dais and covered with a white canopy that was decorated with flowers. Ravana was seen to have one head and two arms, for it was only in battle that he assumed his gigantic form with 10 heads and 20 arms. Hanuman also noticed the numerous wounds upon Ravana's body coming from such illustrious weapons as King Indra's thunderbolt, Airavata's tusk, and Lord Vishnu's chakra. Ravana's dark complexioned body was smeared with sandalwood paste. His earrings flashed like fire as he laid exhausted from a night of feasting, drinking, and erotic enjoyment. Hanuman stared at Ravana respectfully, recoiling slightly in awe of his powerful, majestic appearance. Then Hanuman again turned his attention to Ravana's consorts, who surrounded him like so many glittering stars encircling the full moon. Several were sleeping in the arms of their beloved lord, while others caressed the musical instruments they had played earlier in the evening. Like a lotus clinging to a floating tree branch in midstream, one slender-waisted beauty embraced her veena. Another held a drum in her lap as if it were her infant child. Another full-breasted lady hugged her tambourine tightly as though it was her lover that had returned from a long absence. Lying a bit apart from the rest of the women on a lavishly decorated couch was the fair-complexioned Mandodari, Ravana's favorite queen. When Hanuman saw how young, beautiful, and dignified she appeared, he thought, "This must be Sita." Feeling overjoyed at his discovery, Hanuman rejoiced like a monkey by slapping his arms, jumping for joy, kissing his tail, and climbing up and down the palace pillars. However, after a moment's consideration, Hanuman concluded, "This cannot be Sita. It must be someone else. Sita would not even be able to eat or sleep in separation from Rama, nor would she decorate herself nicely or accept the association of another male, even if he were the king of heaven. Indeed, in comparison to Rama, what are the demigods? What to speak of a wicked Rakshasa like Ravana?" Thereafter, Hanuman continued his search, wandering from room to room throughout the rest of Ravana's palace. He saw thousands of moon-faced women sleeping amid vessels containing huge quantities of meat and wine, along with drinking glasses that were scattered about. Hanuman had to observe all these women very closely while searching for Sita, and thus began to have misgivings. Hanuman thought to himself, "Perhaps I have violated religious principles by gazing upon the wives of others, sleeping in a state of undress. What will be my destination?" However, after some consideration, Hanuman concluded, it is the motive that determines if an act is virtuous or sinful. While gazing upon these women, I have remained pure in mind, for my only concern is to find Sita. Since I am looking for a woman, where else can I search except among women? I am only doing this in the service of Lord Rama. Therefore, my looking upon others' wives cannot be sinful. When Hanuman had completed his search of Ravana's palace without finding a trace of Sita, he concluded that she must no longer be alive. Hanuman became saddened at heart. He wondered what he would tell the other monkeys who were anxiously awaiting his return. However, Hanuman fought his depression by reminding himself that unwavering determination is the only cause for success. Still hoping for the best, he continued to search the palaces that remained uncovered. But after scouring Lanka again and again, Hanuman became completely disheartened. Although Sampati had assured him that Sita was in Lanka, Hanuman could not find her anywhere. He began to speculate about what might have happened. Perhaps Sita had died out of fear while being carried by Lanka by Ravana. Perhaps he dropped her out of fear of Rama. Sita might have wriggled free and fallen into the ocean, or perhaps Ravana devoured her when she refused to become his consort. Hanuman's thoughts then turned to the disastrous results that would ensue if he were to return Rama and report his failure. Without Sita, Rama would surely give up his life, and Lakshmana would follow suit. If he were to return to Rama to report his failure. When Bharata and Shatrughna heard that Rama and Lakshmana have died, they will also end their lives. With all four sons gone, the three mothers will certainly wither away and die. Because of their failure, Sugriva, Angada, and the other monkeys will give up their lives out of shame. Therefore, I must not return to Kishkindya. Either I will commit suicide or live out the rest of my life as a recluse. As Hanuman struggled to emerge from these gloomy thoughts, he considered, maybe I should kill Ravana or drag him back to Rama so that he can be offered as a human sacrifice to Lord Shiva. Seated upon one of Lanka's high defense walls, Hanuman suddenly spied a large grove of Ashoka trees on the outskirts of town that he had not yet explored. Hanuman resolved to continue his search. He first offered his obeisances to Rama, Lakshman, and the principal demigods. Then he leapt from the defensive walls into the Ashoka Grove. Hanuman roamed about within the grove for some time and then climbed a tall tree to gain a better view. From the treetop, Hanuman could see a mountain stream cascading down into a nearby lotus pond. Surrounded by flowering trees, this idyllic garden seemed the perfect place for Sita. Hanuman decided to remain stationed in the treetop in the hope that Sita would come there to take her morning bath and perform her devotional duties. Gazing in another direction, Hanuman sighted a lofty temple supported by 1,000 pillars and situated within a nearby garden. In front of the temple sat a woman dressed in a single, dirty, worn-out, fine yellow cloth. She appeared emaciated from fasting, and because of her anguish, she sighed heavily again and again. Although her face was wet with tears, displaying her anxiety and exhaustion, she nonetheless shone with a divine radiance. Looking like a smoke-covered fire, she was surrounded by many Rakshasis. Hanuman recognized her to be the woman he saw earlier being carried away by Ravana. Likewise, he detected that the ornaments she wore matched the description of those given by Rama. Hanuman gazed at the woman's full moon face, her graceful eyebrows, her full breasts, her bright red lips, her slender waist, her lotus petal eyes, her delicate symmetrical limbs, and concluded that she must be Sita. Although as lovely as the goddess of love, she sat upon the ground like an ascetic practicing penances. Appearing most glorious, she suffered acute anguish, and thus appeared like a sacred text misinterpreted, like wealth squandered, like faith shattered, like hope frustrated, like ideals impeded, like intellect corrupted, or like fame blackened. Hanuman thought, "This is the woman whom Rama loves and for whom he suffers, sometimes feeling pity, sometimes tenderness, and sometimes grief. Pity for the dear one whom he failed to protect, tenderness for the woman who is solely dependent upon him, and grief at suddenly losing his beloved wife. Sita's grace and beauty resemble that of Rama. She is certainly worth the trouble of jumping over to Lanka and killing all the Rakshasas. Indeed, if Sita were placed on one side of a scale, and the sovereignty of the three worlds on the other side, the latter would not measure even a fraction of her worth. It is painful to see how she suffers at the hands of Ravana. Still, I know that because of remaining absorbed in thoughts of Rama, she cannot perceive her external suffering." The moon rose to help Hanuman observe Sita and the dangerous Rakshasis guarding her. Some of these Rakshasis had only one eye or ear. One had ears all over her body, and another had a nose in the middle of her forehead. Some were bald, and some were dwarfs. Some were hunchbacks, and some had lips that hung down to their chins. Some had heads that resembled boars, deer, camels, tigers, or horses. Others had only a single hand or foot. Other Rakshasis had heads that were sunk into their bodies, like Kabandha, and most had meat and blood smeared over their bodies. Hanuman wept tears of joy in finding Sita. Remaining concealed atop the Ashoka tree, he watched her as the night passed away. Ravana was awakened before dawn by the singing of the bards, who praised his glories to the accompaniment of musical instruments. As he arose, Ravana began to think of Sita, for he was irresistibly drawn to her. Unable to suppress his sensual longing for the princess of Videha, Ravana set out for the Ashoka Grove, accompanied by 100 beautiful women carrying golden lamps, chamaras, cushions, water, and other paraphernalia. Still, under the influence of the previous night's intoxication, Ravana staggered along, followed by the lovely ladies, who appeared to be like flashes of lightning behind a cloud. When Hanuman saw Ravana approach, he concealed himself behind a cluster of leafy branches. When Sita saw Ravana coming, she covered her body as best she could. Then, trembling violently, she sat down and wept. As Sita sat upon the bare ground, she swayed back and forth like a frail boat tossing upon a stormy sea. In her wretched condition, Sita appeared to be like an understanding that had become dim, hope that had been frustrated, an order flouted or a sacred altar that had been desecrated. She was like a full moon in eclipse, an army that had been routed, or a stream dried up from drought. She was like a pond whose lotuses had been uprooted, an extinguished flame, or birds fleeing from fright. Sita's body had become emaciated and her mind depressed from her fasting and grief. Ravana came before Sita and began speaking in the hope of seducing her. "O most fair and beautiful lady, why do you cover your shapely breasts and thin waist? O large-eyed beauty, I am afflicted with love for you. So please give up your shyness. Favor me, my beloved, and fulfill my unbearable longing to have you. It has always been the custom of Rakshasas to carry away or rape the wives of others. However, I shall not touch you as long as you do not voluntarily agree to have me in return. O lovely goddess, why are you lying upon the bare ground? Why do you wear dirty clothes and fast for no reason? Why do you tie your hair in a single braid and constantly sit brooding? Such behavior does not suit a ravishing princess like you. Become my queen and enjoy royal opulence beyond compare within the three worlds. You will have only the best garlands, sandalwood paste, perfumes, and ornaments. You shall eat the finest foods, drink the most ambrosial beverages, lie upon the most luxurious couches, and revel with music, singing, and dancing. Oh, most lovely lady, youth quickly passes. Therefore, your stubbornness is folly. You have the loveliest face, fairer than the moon, and your bodily features are the perfection of artistic workmanship. Become my beloved, and in return I shall do anything for your pleasure. If you like, I shall conquer the entire earth and present it as a gift to your father, King Janaka. Who can dare to defy me? O Sita, after seeing you, I have become so enamored that I can no longer find pleasure in any of my wives, not even Mandodari. Why do you insist upon remaining faithful to Rama, a mere human being, a straw in the street in comparison to me? I doubt whether Rama still lives. Even if he does, you may rest assured that you will never see him again. Sita placed a straw between herself and Ravana as a symbol of her unwillingness to contact him directly. She gently replied, "You should withdraw your mind from me and remain contented with the consorts you already possess. You will never be able to possess me, just as a sinful man fails to achieve perfection. I was born in a noble family and married according to religious principles. I will never act contrary to the tenets of righteousness. There is no hope of your gaining my favor." Turning her back on Ravana, Sita continued, "Because you are acting perversely, directing yourself away from the path of virtue, you will become the cause for the destruction of your entire kingdom. Why not follow the example of good men who protect their wives and the wives of others? The fool who is dissatisfied with his own wife and seeks pleasure with the wives of others is doomed. Why do you ignore the advice of the wise and reject that which is good? Why are you determined to cause the destruction of all the Rakshasas? Do you not know that everyone rejoices at the destruction of wicked persons? I will never be tempted by your offer of insignificant opulence and royal comforts. I am as inseparable from Rama as sunlight is from the sun. The only way that you can save yourself from Rama's wrath is to voluntarily deliver me back to him. You should try to make friendship with him, for he is very merciful to those who take shelter of him. Otherwise, it will not be long before Rama and Lakshmana come here and suck out your life breath with their arrows. You shall never escape Rama's vengeance, even though you may be capable of saving yourself from Indra's thunderbolt. It is only a matter of time before Rama finds you out and kills you for your wickedness." Ravana retorted, "Generally, the more courteously a man treats a woman, the more agreeably she responds to him. In your case, however, the opposite holds true. I should kill you for your harsh words. You are fortunate, however, because my love for you controls my anger like a charioteer that curbs unruly steeds. Love acts strangely, for the more a beloved mistreats her lover, the more he showers her with affection. It is for this reason alone that I do not kill you, although death and dishonor are what you deserve. Already 10 months of your 1 year grace period have passed. Thus I shall wait only 2 more months. Then, if you shall refuse to reciprocate my love, I shall have you chopped to pieces by my cooks and served for my breakfast." Several of Ravana's consorts that had been forcibly abducted by him were also present there, and upon hearing his threats, they felt sympathetic toward Sita. As Ravana prepared to depart, they briefly comforted Sita, and their compassionate words giving Sita some small reassurance. Thus feeling encouraged, Sita again rebuked Ravana, saying, "You cannot have a single well-wisher within your kingdom, for no one has tried to deter you from this noble act, which is meant for your destruction. Ramana is like a mighty elephant, and you are a tiny rabbit. You can speak boldly only while Rama is out of sight. I could reduce you to ashes myself by utilizing my mystic power, but I refrain from doing so because I have not received such an order from Rama. You are a fool, for it is impossible to kidnap the wife of Lord Rama. You have only been able to do so because this is the device Providence has chosen to have me as the instrumental cause of your death." Struck by these sharp words, Ravana hissed like a serpent and gazed at Sita with angry, bloodshot eyes. "I will kill you this very day," Ravana bellowed. Then, addressing the Rakshasis who guarded Sita, he said, "You must make Sita submit to me by any means possible, whether conciliation, gifts, or force." Ravana turned menacingly towards Sita, and it appeared that he might suddenly become violent. However, Mandodari, who had come with Ravana's youngest consort, Dhanya Malini, embraced her husband, saying, "Come back to your palace and enjoy with us. Forget about this pale, emaciated Sita. When a man desires to enjoy a woman who does not love him, he only suffers. However, when the woman loves him in return, he enjoys extreme delight." Ravana, thus dissuaded from further abusing Sita, Laughing conceitedly, he returned to his palace. The hideous Rakshasi guards then approached Sita and began to threaten her in harsh, angry voices. One Rakshasi said, "You should give up your false pride and accept Ravana, for he is a very exalted personality. You should know that one of Lord Brahma's mentally conceived sons was Pulastya, whose mentally conceived son was Vishravarishi, whose son is Ravana. Do not hesitate to accept the king of the Rakshasas, thinking him unworthy of you. If you remain adamant, it will certainly result in your destruction." Another Rakshasi said, "You are a fool for refusing to become Ravana's queen. Don't you know that at his command the trees scatter flowers and the clouds release torrents of rain? The sun does not shine and the wind refuses to blow if they displease Ravana. Oh, sweet, smiling goddess, listen to our advice, or else face a horrible death." Sita, however, calmly replied, "You can devour me if you like. I shall never submit to Ravana." Finding Sita unbending, the Rakshasis picked up spears, axes, and knives, threatening Sita as they circled around her. One shouted, "You are young, soft, and tender. I shall devour your heart, liver, and spleen this very moment if you do not submit to Ravana." Others exclaimed, "I shall eat up your rosy red cheeks. I will savor your succulent thighs. I will drink your hot blood." Then another Rakshasi interrupted, "I hate squabbling. Let's chop her up and divide her into equal morsels. Order wine to be brought. Let us feast upon her flesh and dance before the goddess Bhadrakali." Sita could no longer bear their ghastly remarks and burst into tears. Trembling violently with fear, she cried out, "O Rama! O Lakshmana!" Sita lamented, "Why doesn't Rama come here to save me? Perhaps he doesn't know where I am. Maybe he has already died from feelings of separation and is now residing in heaven. Perhaps Ravana was somehow able to kill him by means of some sinister trick. Oh, when will Rama come to take me back to Ayodhya after destroying all these Rakshasas? Why am I so unfortunate that I cannot give up my life at once? If only I could die, for death would surely be better than this unbearable misery." While the Rakshasis were attempting to intimidate Sita, one elderly woman named Trijata suddenly awoke from a deep slumber. Trijata approached the other Rakshasis and prudently spoke as follows, "You wretches, how can you dare torment Sita like this? You shall never be able to devour her. I shall now tell you why. I have just had an incredibly vivid dream wherein I saw Rama come here to rescue Sita and slaying all the Rakshasas." When the other Rakshasis begged her to describe her dream in detail, Trijata continued, "I saw Rama and Lakshmana dressed all in white and wearing white garlands. They were soaring through the air in a white celestial chariot drawn by 1,000 white horses. Then the scene changed, and I saw Rama seated upon a gigantic four-tusked elephant dressed all in white. Sita, too, was dressed in white and was standing upon a white mountain in the middle of the sea. When Rama came nearby, Sita mounted the elephant and became reunited with her beloved husband. After this, I saw Rama, Sita, and Lakshmana flying through the air toward the north in the Pushpaka chariot. I then saw Ravana in my dream with a shaved head, his body smeared with red sandalwood paste. He was riding a chariot drawn by asses, drinking oil and laughing as though mentally deranged. As the chariot rode off, I saw Ravana disappear into a gloomy hell filled with filthy things that emitted a foul odor. I saw Kumbhakarna, the sons of Ravana, in the same way, but not Vibhishana. Vibhishana was mounted upon a four-tusked elephant covered by white canopy and was heralded by conch shells and kettle drums. Finally, I saw the whole of Lanka crumble and fall into the sea. I have concluded that very soon Rama will come and recover Sita after slaying the Rakshasas. You must now give up tormenting Sita and beg her for forgiveness." Meanwhile, auspicious signs appeared in the irreproachable body of Sita, like servants eager to wait upon a wealthy man. Her lotus-like left eye began to twitch, and her left arm gently throbbed. Sita's graceful left thigh also quivered, as if Rama himself were standing before her, Noticing all this, Trijata declared, "Because of these auspicious signs, I can understand that Sita will soon receive some very good news." Hearing this, Sita became elated and said, "If all that you have described comes true, then I will make certain you are afforded all protection from the wrath of my husband." However, Sita soon lapsed into her usual hopeless mood as she gazed at the Rakshasas around her. She thought, "What if Ravana kills me before Rama is able to come save me? In this miserable situation, I cannot bear the torment." Desiring to end her life, Sita took the string binding her hair and knotted it tightly around her neck. Then she began tying the other end to the branch of an Ashoka tree. However, just at that moment, Sita experienced many auspicious signs and her mood brightened. All the while, Hanuman had remained hidden, listening to Sita and the Rakshasis. He began considering the situation. "I must go to comfort Sita, for her intelligence has become covered due to her intense grief. I must somehow allay her fears and give her hope before returning to Rama. Indeed, at any time she may decide to give up her life out of despair. Still, how can I talk with her in the midst of these Rakshasis? Never mind, somehow I must do it. Rama will surely ask me if I have any message from Sita. If I reply that I have none, he may decide to burn me to ashes with his anger. Therefore, I think both Sita and Rama need to be consoled with news of each other. I will go to meet Sita while her guards are inattentive. If I speak to her in Sanskrit, she will surely have faith in my words. However, if I speak like a Brahmana, she may think that I am Ravana disguised as a mendicant. Perhaps if I address her in the Ayodhya dialect, she will believe me. But if she hears a monkey speaking like a human, she will think I am Ravana. How perplexing this is, especially since Ravana can assume any form he likes. I must be very careful, for if she screams, her cries will alert the guards. If the guards see me, they will also become afraid because of my gigantic size. Thus they will call for the help of Ravana's soldiers. Then I could be taken captive. Even if I were able to defeat all the Rakshasas, I would probably be too tired to jump back to the mainland. I must consider how to approach Sita very carefully, for a thoughtless messenger can ruin even the most perfect plan." After pondering his dilemma in great detail, Hanuman finally concluded, "I will first sing Rama's praises to gain Sita's confidence. Then I shall deliver Rama's message to her." Excuse me. From within the branches of that great Ashoka tree, Hanuman began to recite, "Descendant of Ikshvaku, King Dasharath was his name. Righteous and heroic, he ruled Ayodhya of fame. He received 4 mighty sons, Rama the loved of his heart, full of infinite potencies, Vishnu in a human part. To give Kaikeyi her boons, into exile Rama was sent. Upholder of his father's vow, with Sita and Lakshman he went. When Rama killed the Rakshasas who filled the rishis with fear, Ravana kidnapped Sita with the help of Maricha the deer. Then in his search for Sita, Rama made Sugriva a friend. To search the southern quarter, I, Hanuman, he did send. After crossing many mountains, I jumped the ocean vast, and thus I have succeeded in finding you at last. Rama will come to save you, his dearly beloved wife. Now give me a little message to save your husband's life." As Hanuman fell silent, Sita began looking up into the tree to find the speaker. When she sighted Hanuman, Sita thought she must be dreaming. "It is inauspicious to see a monkey in dreams," she murmured to herself. Overwrought from anguish, Sita wept bitterly, then suddenly fainted. When she regained consciousness, she thought, "After seeing a monkey in that nightmare, I should pray for the welfare of Rama and Lakshmana. But how could I have been dreaming? In my state of anguish, being separated from Rama, I cannot sleep even for a moment. It must have been not a dream, but a hallucination. The monkey I saw could not have been real. For wherever I look, I only see Rama. My ears only hear Rama's voice, and I can think only of Rama and nothing else. I cannot believe the monkey was illusory, for he appeared so real. Oh, lords Brahma, Indra, Surya, and Vayu, please let the monkey really exist, and let his words of Rama bring me auspiciousness." Hanuman came down from his hiding place in the tree. Standing before Sita with folded hands, he inquired, "Who are you? You appear to be a goddess, and I think you must be the consort of Rama." Sita was delighted to hear Rama's name, and in reply to Hanuman's questions, she practically narrated the entire story of her life. In conclusion, Sita explained, "Ravana has given me only 2 more months to live. If Rama does not come here before then, I shall give up my life." Gaining confidence, Hanuman said, "I am an envoy from Rama, and I can assure you he is quite well. Rama has sent me here to locate you. He anxiously inquires about your welfare." Sita was delighted. With great happiness, they continued talking to each other. However, as they became engrossed in conversation, Hanuman gradually began inching his way closer to Sita. Upon realizing this, Sita was suddenly seized with the thought that he was actually Ravana disguised as a monkey. Thus, she exclaimed, "Oh, how disgusting that I have been tricked into talking with you!" Sita then sank to the ground. Exhausted from grief, she rebuked Hanuman, saying, "How abominable for you to come to me in disguise." The next moment, however, Sita considered, "I certainly feel delighted at heart to see this monkey. Perhaps my suspicions are false. Perhaps he really is a messenger from Rama." Thus composing herself, Sita again addressed Hanuman more favorably. "Please tell me more of Rama. Your descriptions of him are most pleasing to my ears and heart." In truth, Sita was absorbed in intense ecstasy and separation from Rama. Thus her talks were manifestations of transcendental madness. Like a deranged woman, Sita again began speculating. "Maybe this monkey is a ghost. Perhaps I only imagine I see him because I have been mentally unbalanced due to my agony. No, I should not even think like this. Why should I allow myself to become carried away by my disturbed mind? From this speech, it appears that this monkey came here in the service of Rama. However, how can I believe that a mere monkey could jump over the ocean to Lanka? It must be Ravana who has come here in disguise." Who else spoke to a messenger in kind of madness, changing her mind about who she thought the messenger was? Radharani. When she spoke to the bumblebee at the time that Uddhava came to give Krishna's message to the gopis. Hanuman could understand Sita's doubts, and to allay her fears, he continued to glorify Rama and reassure her in various ways. Then, to test Hanuman, Sita said, "Please tell me the story of how you met Rama. Also describe to me in full detail the bodily features of Rama and his brother Lakshmana." Hanuman then said, "O princess of Videha, Rama has eyes that resemble lotus petals. He has broad shoulders and mighty arms, and his neck is shaped like a conch. His eyes are coppery and his voice deep like the sound of a kettle drum. He is solid in 3 places, his breast, wrist, and fist. He is elevated in 3 places, his chest, the rim of his navel, and his abdomen. He is reddish in 3 places, his eyes, his nails and palms, and the soles of his feet. He is deep of voice, his navel is deep, and he walks swiftly. He has 3 folds of skin on the neck and belly. He is small in 4 places, neck, genitals, calves, and back. He walks with 4 different gaits, like a lion, like a tiger, like an elephant, and like a bull. 10 places on his body are like a lotus. His complexion, mouth, eyes, tongue, lips, palate, breast, nails, hands, and feet. He is fine in 4 places, his bodily hair, skin, finger joints, and perception. Indeed, he has all these features and many more. The beauty of Lakshmana is also immeasurable. Lakshmana's complexion is golden, whereas Lord Rama's is dark greenish-blue. I met the 2 brothers at the Rishyamukha mountain. When Rama saw the jewels you dropped in the midst of the monkeys while being carried away by Ravana, he became overwhelmed with joy and tears fell from his eyes. To establish an alliance of friendship with Sugriva, Rama killed Vali. To repay this favor, Sugriva initiated a great search for you all over the world by dispatching millions of monkeys. Now, by good fortune, I have located you in this remote place. I am the son of the mighty monkey Kesari. My father originally resided at the Malaya Hills and later moved to the Gokarna Mountain. When Sambasadna was oppressing the celestial rishis, Kesari killed the great demon at their request. Thereafter, I was begot by the wind god Vayu through the womb of Kesari's consort. After hearing Hanuman's description of Rama, Sita became convinced that he was indeed a messenger sent by her husband. She began shedding tears of joy. Hanuman then took the opportunity to give Rama's ring to Sita. Recognizing it and seeing the name of her beloved on the inside band, Sita's face blossomed with joy, as if she were experiencing the arrival of Rama himself. She said, "O Hanuman, I am eternally indebted to you for this gift. You are so magnanimous to have come here for my sake. Now, please tell me more about Rama." With folded hands, Hanuman replied, "It is only because Rama does not know where you are that he has not come here to rescue you. Without you, Rama does not know a moment's peace of mind. Truly, as soon as I return and inform Rama of your presence here, he will immediately come and kill Ravana." Sita then urged, "You must stress to Rama the urgency of the matter, for after 2 months Ravana will kill me." Ravana's younger half-brother Vibhishana has repeatedly pleaded with Ravana to return me to Rama. Likewise, Vibhishana's eldest daughter has told me how a wise minister named Avindya forewarned Ravana of the imminent destruction of the Rakshasas at the hands of Rama, but Ravana refuses to listen to this advice. Hanuman suggested, "If you like, I can immediately deliver you to Rama by carrying you to Kishkindhya on my back. I am sure that the Rakshasas could not keep up with me as I fly across the ocean." Sita was thrilled to hear this prospect, but still she replied, "Your proposal seems quite like what a monkey would present. How can someone so small even think of carrying me across the ocean?" Hanuman was a little offended by this remark, and so he thought, "How little she thinks of me." Then, to demonstrate his prowess, Hanuman revealed his gigantic form, boasting, "If you like, I can uproot the entire city of Lanka. Then, along with Ravana, I will carry it back to Rama. So please give up your doubts about me." Sita admitted, "You are certainly strong enough to carry me across the ocean. However, I do not think it's such a good idea. What if I become faint as you dash across the sky and fall into the shark and crocodile-infested water? Moreover, when Rakshasas rally and attack you, you will be fully engaged in fighting with them. What will happen to me? Even if you somehow manage to kill all the Rakshasas, this would only serve to diminish the glory of Rama. O Hanuman, since I am completely devoted to my husband, I do not want to touch the body of anyone else but Rama. When Ravana kidnapped me, I was helpless and had no choice. However, Rama must now come here himself to rescue me after killing the wicked Ravana. This act alone would be worthy of enhancing his glorious reputation." Hanuman replied, "I appreciate your statements, which are just befitting the chaste and righteous wife of Rama. I will now leave. But first, please give me some token that I can give Rama to help me convince him that I've actually met you." With tear-filled eyes, Sita replied in a faint voice, "O Hanuman, to convince Rama that you have met me, you may relate to him the following incident. One day, while we were residing at Chitrakuta, after playing in the water, Rama, still dripping wet, sat down on my lap. At that time, a crow came and began pecking at me, as though eager to eat my flesh. I picked up a lump of dirt to throw to scare it away, but the determined crow remained on the scene, hiding nearby. Becoming angered, I accidentally pulled the string that held my slip, causing it to fall down. Seeing this, Rama laughed heartily, taking advantage of my flustered countenance. In the meantime, the crow returned and again pecked at me. I took shelter of Rama by sitting on his lap, and he comforted me, wiping the tears from my eyes. Feeling exhausted, I soon fell asleep in Rama's arms, and soon he too dozed off. Taking advantage of this opportunity, the crow suddenly swooped down and clawed at my breasts. This awakened Rama, who felt drops of my blood falling on him. Seeing the cuts on my breasts, Rama became enraged and asked me to identify the culprit. Then, before I could answer, he saw the crow sitting at a distance, his claws dripping with blood. In great anger, Rama took a blade of kusha grass from his mat and surcharged it with the power of a brahmastra. As the straw burst into flames, Rama hurled it at the crow. Then, as the bird flew up into the sky, the kusha grass weapon followed it. This crow, however, was the son of Indra, and while being chased by the brahmastra, he tried to obtain shelter all over the universe. But even his father was powerless to help him. Finally, the crow came and surrendered to Rama. Out of compassion, Rama forgave the pale, exhausted bird. But he said, "This Brahmastra cannot be ineffectual. Therefore, it must be directed somewhere." Saying this, Rama directed the weapon to destroy the crow's right eye. Thereafter, Indra's son departed after offering his obeisances. Sita became overwhelmed with sorrow while relating her pastime with Rama. Then, with tear-stained eyes, she said, "O Hanuman, formerly Rama used the Brahmastra against an insignificant crow. Why does he not attack Ravana now? Does Rama no longer have any affection for me? In some former life, I must have committed an abominable sin to cause Rama to disregard me now." Hoping to encourage the despondent Sita, Hanuman reassured her, "Rama is feeling great separation from you and is merged in the ocean of sorrow. Now please give me some object that I can show to Rama." Sita sighed and said, "At least I now have some real hope of being rescued. Somehow you must urge Rama to come quickly, for if I must pass another month away from him, I will surely die of grief." Sita produced a bright jewel from her cloth that she formerly used to ornament her head. Giving it to Hanuman, Sita said, "When Rama sees this jewel, he will remember three persons. Since it was given to me by my mother as a dowry gift in the presence of Rama and his father, O Hanuman, please return quickly and urge Rama to quickly terminate my unbearable suffering." Hanuman then circumambulated Sita and was about to depart when, in a voice choked with tears, Sita said, "Please convince Rama to hasten my rescue." Hanuman replied, "Do not worry. Soon you shall see Rama, Lakshmana, and all the heroic monkeys as they come here to slay Ravana and the Rakshasas." Sita pleaded, "Please stay for just one more day. By your association, I have gained some small relief from my intolerable miseries. Oh, why do I even bother to raise my hopes? How will the monkeys be able to cross the vast ocean? Oh, do not think that even Rama and Lakshmana have the capacity, but only Garuda, Vayu, or yourself. Hanuman, I know you could rescue me single-handed. However, I request that you somehow enable Rama to kill all the Rakshasas and save me, for that will internally enhance his glorious reputation." Hanuman replied, "All the monkeys in Sugriva's army are equal or superior to me. Surely they will all easily reach Lanka. It is only inferior persons like myself that are sent on errands. Please give up all your doubts for good. If need be, I will cross over the ocean carrying Rama and Lakshmana on my back." Sita then replied, "O Hanuman, I again urge you to see that my rescue is hastened. I do not know how much longer I shall be able to survive under these conditions. I will give you one more message for Rama. Remind him of the time he painted my cheeks with a red mineral to replace the decorations that had worn off." As Hanuman prepared to depart, Sita repeatedly implored him to hasten her rescue. Hanuman then considered, "My mission will not be complete without ascertaining the true strength of the Rakshasas. Therefore, I shall destroy this Ashoka grove, the pleasure garden of Ravana, just to provoke his anger. When the king of the Rakshasas sends his army to attack me, I will destroy it and then return to Rama." Thereafter, Hanuman started knocking down and uprooting Ashoka trees. He stirred up the ponds and crushed the hilltops. Then, after practically destroying the entire garden, he made his stand at the entrance. Upon hearing the frightened screams of the birds and animals, along with the other sounds created by Hanuman's rampage, the Rakshasi guards awoke with a start. Seeing Hanuman's huge form standing at the garden entrance, their hearts filled with terror. The Rakshasis surrounded Sita and asked, "Who is this creature? What were you and he conversing about?" Sita denied knowing who Hanuman was, saying, "He must be a ferocious Rakshasa. Since you are all Rakshasas, it is you that should know him, not I. I too am terrified by his huge, frightening appearance." While some of the Rakshasis remained guarding Sita, others went and reported the matter to Ravana. Reverently bowing to their king, the Rakshasis said, "A huge, powerful monkey has come here. After talking to Sita, he devastated the entire Ashoka grove, except for the small area where Sita stays. When we asked Sita about him, however, she claimed not to know him." Ravana immediately became enraged and dispatched 80,000 fierce Rakshasas to go and capture Hanuman. When the army came before him, brandishing their weapons, Hanuman further expanded his form and began lashing his tail violently, making a sound so loud that it reverberated throughout Lanka. Hanuman then challenged, "I am a servant of Lord Rama. If I like, I can kill 1,000 Ravanas."